Welcome back, Hemingway Listorians, to the Hemingway List podcast, the podcast where we list Hemingway's things. We're looking at book 11, chapter 3, then we'll be reading chapter 4. Lisa wants to burn the place down. What's behind this sentiment? What did the letter to Ivan say, do you think? And why do you think she slammed her finger in the door? I'm a wretch. Cool chapter. Yeah, I enjoyed yesterday's chapter, chapter 3. It had some movement about it, and I mean, it had to be quite grotesque and quite in your face to wake me back up after the monotony of the previous chapters. But I think maybe so far, other than the kids throwing the sticks and stones at each other, that chapter, this was probably the only other chapter that stood out to me as, like, entertaining, with any sort of entertainment value to it, which I appreciate in, you know, a work of fiction, some entertainment. So I liked this chapter. J. Mama said, what an unusual chapter. It seems Alyosha is lost in a sea of insanity. Uncle Jossimer said, why do you think she slammed her finger? The behaviour in Lisa is not unusual among teens. Self-harming behaviour is on the rise among today's teens, and it is one of the unspoken issues of mental health in young people. I'm really amazed that Dosto wrote openly about this matter more than 100 years ago. His novels are an encyclopedia of psychology, and each character describes a particular case. That's simply incredible. Yeah, again, I've got to disagree with that. Because him observing someone in real life, you know, a teenage girl self-harming, would have, you know, it's always been a thing that teenagers have done. And so it wouldn't have been unlikely for him to see that and then just represent it in his character. But I don't see the encyclopedia of psychology bit. Like, I think he was just mimicking, like, a friend of his would say, oh, my daughter slammed her finger in the thing, and this is, you know, and he gets to know that person, and I don't know, like, it's just like the actions, but without the depth behind it. Although, that's a bit unfair, because in this case, in this one particular case with Lisa, she does have a seem to have a little bit of, like, depth going on, but, yeah, I don't know. I'm not amazed at all by, like, the depth of the psychology. I think he's just, he's describing the actions but not the psychology under it. And really, anyone can do that. It's just a list of things that he's witnessed. According to psychology, Uncle Jossimer continues, self-harming begins during the teen or early adult years as a way to cope with stress and depression. Young people cannot describe or pinpoint the source of their emotional pain, and they hurt themselves. To have a physical and tangible way to identify their suffering, the more stress, the more self-harm. This issue is related to bipolarity, depression, stress, but it seems not much related to suicide. It is not a way to get attention. Much self-harming goes under the parents' radar. How did Dosto know about this phenomenon? He probably just saw it, you know? Maybe he didn't know about it. That's my point. Maybe he's just seen it. But he might not know, like, all that stuff. It's related to bipolar, depression, stress. I don't know. Did he meet some young people like this in prison, in Siberia, or was it an ordinary mental health issue among teens on those times? It's not unusual behaviour, but of course it is worrisome. Laura Weistich said, he was a teen himself at some point. Maybe he experienced it or saw it in others he was close to. Right, says Uncle Rosselmeyer. I really don't see... Like, I appreciate that you enjoy his representations of different people's psyches, but I mean, that's exactly what an author does. They create characters and they make them feel real. The resounding praise for this book about how deep the characters are, I just do not see it. Notes for Underground, I did see it when I read that, to a degree. The neurosis in that main character, that narrator. seemed to have many layers to it, which was quite cool. But I think that was meant to be somewhat autobiographical. Lisa repeated something the underground man said. Says, I am Norwegian. Which was something like, all the world could go to hell just as long as I have my tea. Only Lisa swaps out tea with sweets. Then she goes on to repeat another thing about how boring life is and how it's so much better in fantasy. We are so divorced from it that we feel at once the sort of loathing for real life and so cannot bear to be reminded of it. Why, we have come almost to looking upon real life as an effort, almost as hard work, and we are all privately agreed that it is better in books. And why do we fuss and fume sometimes? Why are we perverse and ask for something else? We don't know that what ourselves. It would be the worse for us if our petulant prayers were answered. Lisa wants scorched earth to be evil, to destroy everything. I don't know what has happened exactly, but she seems to be in crisis. Her words betray that she doesn't think her life or the world in general has any meaning or value. Or maybe even that the world ought to be destroyed. Some people end up like that when they've struggled for a long time. They turn against the world and blame it. Extreme examples of this are school shooters. It's a perverted retribution or a corrupted sense of justice. She slammed the finger in the door to punish herself. Bitch, 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 etc. Shows that that is the case. But I'm not sure if it's because of her conversation with Alyosha or because she hates what she has become. Uncle Josmeyer's comments about self-harm is probably more accurate in general, perhaps here too. I don't think the allusions to the underground man were entirely accidental. Uncle Josmeyer says, I wonder if when Alyosha says those nasty books, he means those nihilistic books so popular at those times. I'm Norwegian, said my mind immediately went to the trashy gossip magazines, especially since she's swiping the books from her mother. Though Kolakov does seem pretty up to date on the fashionable intellectual movements at the time, so it's possible that she has those kinds of books too. Mango Mondo said, wow, I'm not sure why Lisa has changed so abruptly. She seems absolutely demonic. Again, Dosto has us focused on the suffering of children this time. It is Lisa dreaming about eating pineapple compote while watching a child crucified. She shared the vision of Ivan, who believes children's suffering is proof of God's absence or malevolence, and Ivan laughs at Lisa. Dmitri, who we will likely see next chapter, is haunted by visions of a starving child in Siberia. I'm following along with the story, but struggling to make sense of this all thematically. All four characters, Ivan, Dmitri, Alyosha, and Lisa, seem to respond differently to this idea of children suffering. That's what that means exactly. What that means exactly, I don't know. I'm enjoying the book, but this part has me confused. Can anyone offer some insight? Laura Y. Stitch said, she seems absolutely demonic. Yes, hence the name of the chapter, A Little Demon. Hey, yeah. Well spotted. Soma Stars says, I felt like she was a little off in earlier chapters, the giggling and acting strange around Alyosha. One could write it off as childish, but this is a different level of weird. Alright. Excuse me. Oh man, I'm so sorry. I'm always yawning through this podcast. It's because I record it so late at night, and also because I'm just not that interested in this book. I'm sure you know that by now. Let's see what's in store for us today in the next chapter. Chapter 4, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 and a half pages. Okay. Chapter 4, A Hymn and a Secret. It's a long one. God, I hate this book. It was quite late, days are short in November, when Alyosha rang at the prison gate. It was beginning to get dusk, but Alyosha knew that he would be admitted without difficulty. Things were managed in our little town as everywhere else. At first, of course, on the conclusion of the preliminary inquiry, relations and a few other persons could only obtain interviews with Mitya by going through certain inevitable formalities. But later, though the formalities were not relaxed, exceptions were made for some, at least of Mitya's visitors, so much so that sometimes the interviewers with the prisoner in the room set aside for the purpose were practically tete-a-tete. These exceptions, however, were few in number. Only Grushenka, Alyosha and Rakitin were treated like this, but the captain of the police, Mikhail Mihailovich, was very favourably disposed to Grushenka. His abuse of her at Mokrovi weighed on the old man's conscience, and When he learned the whole story, he completely changed his view of her. Strange to say, though he was firmly persuaded of his guilt, yet after Mitchell was once in prison, the old man came to take a more and more lenient view of him. He was a man of good heart, perhaps he thought, who had come to grief from drinking and dissipation. His first horror had been succeeded by pity, as for Alyosha, the police captain, was very fond of him and had known him for a long time. Rakitin, who had of late taken to coming very often to see the prisoner, who was one of the most intimate acquaintances of the police captain's young ladies, as he called them, and was always hanging about their house. He gave lessons in the house of the prison superintendent too, who, though scrupulous in the performance of his duties, was a kind-hearted old man. Alyosha again had an intimate acquaintance of long standing with the superintendent, who was fond of talking to him generally on sacred subjects. He respected Ivan Fyodorovich and stood in awe of his opinion, though he was a great philosopher, self-taught of course, but Alyosha had an irresistible attraction for him. During the last year, the old man had taken to studying the apocryphal gospels, constantly talked over his impressions with his young friend. He used to come, he did this, he did that, he did this, he did that, he said this, he said that. The end of the novel. He used to come and see him in the monastery and discussed for hours together with him and his monks. So even if Alyosha were laid at prison, he had only to go to the superintendent and everything was made easy. Besides, everyone in the prison down in the humblest water had grown used to Alyosha. The sentry, of course, did not trouble him so long as the authorities were satisfied. When Mitya was summoned from his cell, he always went downstairs to the place set aside for interviews. As Alyosha entered the room, he came upon Rakitin, who was just taking leave of Mitya. They were both talking loudly. Mitya was laughing heartily as he saw him out. While Rakitin seemed grumbling, Rakitin did not like meeting Alyosha, especially of late. He scarcely spoke to him and bowed to him stiffly. Seeing Alyosha enter now, he frowned and looked away as though he were entirely absorbed in buttoning his big, warm, fur-trimmed overcoat. Then he began looking at once for his umbrella. "I must mind not to forget my belongings," he muttered, simply to say something. "Mind you don't forget other people's belongings," said Mitya as a joke, and laughed at once at his own wit. Rakitin fired up instantly. "You'd better get that advice to your own family, who've always been a slave-driving lot, and not to Rakitin," he cried, suddenly trembling with anger. "What's the matter? I was joking," cried Mitya. "Damn it all. They're all like that." He turned to Alyosha, nodding towards Rakitin's hurriedly retreating figure. "He was sitting here, laughing and cheerful, and all at once he boils up like that. He didn't even nod to you. Have you broken with him completely? Why are you so late? I've not been simply waiting, but thirsting for you the whole morning. But never mind, we'll make up for it now. Why does he come here so often? Surely you are not such great friends," asked Alyosha. He too nodded at the door, through which Rakitin had disappeared. "Great friends with Rakitin? No, not as much as that. Is it likely a pig like that he considers I am a blackguard? They can't understand a joke either. That's the worst of such people. They never understand a joke, and their souls are dry, dry and flat. They remind me of prison walls when they first brought here. But he is a clever fellow, very clever. Well, Alexei, it's all over with me now." He sat down on the bench, and again Alyosha sat down beside him. "Yes, the trial's tomorrow. Are you so hopeless, brother?" Alyosha said with an apprehensive feeling. "What are you talking about?" said Mitchell, looking at him rather uncertainly. "Oh, you mean the trial? Damn it all. Till now, we've been talking of things that don't matter about this trial, but I haven't said a word to you about the chief thing. Yes, the trial is tomorrow, but it wasn't the trial I meant when I said it was all over with me. Why do you look at me so critically?" "What do you mean, Mitya?" "Ideas, ideas, that's all. Ethics. What is ethics?" "Ethics?" asked Alyosha, wondering. "Yes, it is a science. Yes, there is such a science, but I confess I can't explain to you what sort of science it is. Rakitin knows a lot, damn him. He's not going to be a monk. He means to go to Petersburg. There he'll go in for criticisms of an elevating tendency. Who knows? He may be of use and make his own career too. Oh, they are first rate, these people, at making a career. Damn ethics. I am done for, Alexei. I am. You man of God. I love you more than anyone. It makes my heart yearn to look at you. Who was Carl Bernard?" "Carl Bernard?" Alyosha was surprised again. No, not Carl. Stay, I made a mistake. Claude Bernard. What was he, chemist or what?" "He must have been a savant," answered Alyosha, "but I confess I can't tell you much about him either. I've heard of him as a savant, but what sort, I don't know." Well, damn him, then. I don't know either, swore Mitcher. A scoundrel of some sort, most likely. They are all scoundrels, and Rakitin will make his way. Rakitin will get on anywhere. Here's another Bernard. Ah, these Bernards. They are all over the place. But what is the matter? Alyosha asked insistently. He wants to write an article about me, about my case, and so begin his literary career. That's what he comes for, he said himself. He wants to prove some theory. He wants to say he couldn't help murdering his father. He was corrupted by his environment, and so on. He explained it all to me. He is going to put a tinge of socialism, he says. But there, damn the fellow, he can put it in a tinge if he likes. I don't care. I can't bear Ivan. He hates him. He's not fond of you either, but I don't turn him out, for he is a clever fellow, awfully conceited, though. I said to him just now, the Karamazovs are not blackguards, but philosophers, for all true Russians are philosophers, and though you've studied, you are not a philosopher, you are a low fellow. He laughed so maliciously, and I said to him, De ideibus non est disputandum, there is no disputing ideas. Isn't that rather good? I can set up for being a classic, you see. Mitchell laughed suddenly. Why is it all over with you? You just said just now, Alyosha interposed. Why is it all over with me? The fact is, of it is, if you take it as a whole, I am sorry to lose God. That's why it is. What do you mean, sorry to lose God? Imagine, inside, in the nerves, in the head, that is, these nerves are there in the brain, damn them, there are sort of little trails and these tails of those nerves, and as they begin quivering, that is, you see, I look at something with my eyes and they begin quivering, those little tails, and when they quiver, then an image appears. It doesn't appear at once, but an instant, a second passes, and then something like a moment appears. That is, not a moment, devil take the moment, but an image, that is, an object or an action, damn it. That's why I see and then think, because of those tales, not at all because I have a soul, and that I am some sort of image and likeness, and all is that is nonsense. Rakitin explained it all to me yesterday, brother, and it simply, excuse me, bowled me over. It's magnificent, Alyosha, this science. A new man's arising, that I understand, and yet I am sorry to lose God. Well, that's a good thing anyway, said Alyosha. That I am sorry to lose God. It's chemistry, brother, chemistry. There's no help for it. Your reverence, you must make way for chemistry, and Rakitin does dislike God. Oh, doesn't he dislike him? That's the sore point with all of them, but they conceal it, they tell lies, they pretend. Well, will you preach in the review? I asked him, while it and openly, and they won't let it through, he said. He laughed, but he will become of men. Then I asked him, with God and immortal life, all the things are lawful and they can do, and didn't you know? He said, laughing, a clever man can do what he likes. I said, a clever man knows his way. But you've put your foot in it, committing a murder, and now you are rotting in prison. He says that to my face. A regular pig. I used to kick such people out. But now I listen to him. He talks a lot of sense, too. Writes well. He began reading me an article last week. I copied it out. 3 lines. Wait a minute. Here it is. Mitcher hurriedly pulled out a piece of paper from his pocket and read. In order to determine this question, it is above all essential to put one's personality in contradiction to one's reality. Do you understand that? No, I don't, said Alyosha. He looked at Mitcher and listened to him with curiosity. I don't understand it either. It's dark and obscure, but intellectual. Everyone writes like that now. He said it's the effect of the environment. They are afraid of the environment. He writes poetry, too, the rascal. He's written in honor of Madame Olakov's foot. Ha ha ha. I've heard about it, said Alyosha. Have you? And have you heard the poem? No. I've got it. Here it is. I'll read it to you. You don't know. I haven't told you. There's quite a story about it. He's a rascal. 3 weeks ago he began to tease me. You've got yourself into a mess like a fool for the sake of 3,000. But I'm going to call 150,000. I'm going to marry a widow and buy a house in Petersburg. And he told me he was courting Madame Olakov. He hadn't much brains in her youth, she hadn't, and now at 40 she had lost what she had, but she's awfully sentimental, he says. That's how I shall get hold of her. When I marry her, I shall take her to Petersburg, and there I shall start a newspaper. And his mouth was simply watering, the beast, not for the widow, but the 150,000, and he made me believe it. He came to see me every day. She is coming round, he declared. He was beaming with delight, and then all of a sudden he turned out of the house. Perhotin's carrying everything before him, bravo, I could kiss the silly old doodle for turning him out of the house, and he had written his doggerel. It is the first time I've soiled my hands with writing poetry, he said. It's to win her heart, so it's a good cause. When I got hold of the silly woman's fortune, I can be of great social utility. They have this social justification for every nasty thing they do. Anyway, it's better than your Pushkin's poetry, he said, for I've managed to advocate enlightenment even in that. I understand what he means about Pushkin, I quite see that. if he really was a man of talent and only wrote about women's feet. But he wasn't. Rakitin struck up about his doggerel, the vanity of these fellows. On the convalescence of the swollen foot of the object of my affections, he thought of that for a title. He's a waggish fellow. A captivating little foot, though swollen and red and tender, the doctors come and plasters put, but still they cannot mend her, and yet 'tis not for her foot I dread, a theme for Pushkin's muse more fit. It's not for her foot, it's for her head, I tremble for her loss of wit. For as her foot swells, strange to say, her intellect is on the wane. Oh, for some remedy, I pray, that may restore both foot and brain. He is a pig, a regular pig, but he is very arch and rascal. And he really has put in a progressive idea. He wasn't he angry when she kicked him out? He was gnashing his teeth. He's taken his revenge already, said Alyosha. He's written a paragraph about Madame Harlikov, and Alyosha told him briefly about the paragraph in Gossip. That's his doing, Mitya assented, frowning. That's him, these paragraphs, I know, the insulting things that have been written about Grishenka, for instance, and about Katya too. He walked across the room with a harassed air. Brother, I cannot stay long, Alyosha said after a pause. Tomorrow will be a great and awful day for you. The judgment of God will be accomplished, and I am amazed for you, and will walk about it here and will depend on what to do. No, don't be amazed at me, Mitya broke in warmly. Am I still talking a stink? He went up to Alyosha excitedly and kissed him, his eyes closed. Rakitin wouldn't understand it. He began in a sort of exultation. But you'll understand it all. That's why I was thirsting for you. You see, there's so much I've been wanting to tell you for ever so long. Here within these peeling walls, but I haven't said a word about what matters most. The moment never seems to have come. Now I can wait no longer. I must pour out my heart to you, brother. These last 2 months I've found myself a new man. A new man has risen up in me. He was hidden in me, but would never have come to the surface if I hadn't been for this blow from heaven, I am afraid. And what do I care if I spend 20 years in the mines, breaking ore with a hammer? I am not a bit afraid of that. It's something else I am afraid of now, that new man may leave me. Even there in the mines underground I may find a human heart and another convict and murderer by my side, and I may make friends with him, and even then at one live and life and suffer, one may thaw and receive a frozen heart in that convict, one may wait upon him for years, and at last bring up from that dark depths a lofty soul, a feeling suffering creature, one may bring forth an angel, create a hero. There are so many of them, hundreds of them, and we are all to blame for them. Why was it I dreamed of that babe at such a moment? Why is that babe so poor? That was a sign to me at that moment. It's for the babe I'm going, because we are all responsible for all the babes, for there are big children as well as little children. All are babes. I go for all, because someone must go for all. I didn't kill father, but I got to go. I accept it. It's all come to me here within these peeling walls. There are numbers of them there, hundreds of them underground, with hammers in their hands. Oh yes, we shall find freedom with sorrow, sorrow, great sorrow, rise again, joy. With the man cannot live and nor God, and love God, something joy in his privilege, a grand one. Oh man, should something pray, something underground, God, Rakitin is laughing. If they drive God from the earth, we shall sell to him underground. More shit about God, more shit about being underground, more shit about prison. And then men underground, more about underground, something about glorious hymns, God's joys, grail, holy grail, I love him. Mitya was almost gasping for breath as he uttered his wild speech. He turned pale, his lips quivered, and tears rolled down his cheeks. Yes, life is full, there is life underground, he began again. You wouldn't believe, Alexei, how I want to live now. What a thirst for existence and consciousness has sprung up in me for these peeling walls. Rakitin doesn't understand that. All he cares about is building a house and letting flats. But I've been longing for you, and what is suffering? I am not afraid of it, even if it were beyond reckoning. I am not afraid of it now. I was afraid of it before. You know, perhaps I won't answer at the trial at all. And I seem to have such strength in me now, that I think I could stand anything, any suffering, only to be able to say and to repeat to myself every moment I exist in thousands of agonies. I exist, I'm tormented on the rack, but I exist. Though I sit alone on a pillar, I exist. I saw the sun, and if I don't see the sun, I know it's there. And there's a whole life in that, in knowing that the sun is there. Alyosha, my angel, all these philosophies are the death of me. Damn them, brother Ivan. What if Brother Ivan, interrupted Alyosha, but Mitya did not hear. You see, I never had any of these doubts before, but it was all hidden away in me. It was perhaps just because ideas I did not understand were surging up in me that I used to drink and fight and rage and stifle them in myself, to still them, to smother them. Ivan is not Rakitin. There is an idea in him. Ivan is a sphinx and is silent in a way. God is worrying me. That's the only thing worrying me. And if he doesn't exist, what's Rakitin? Then if he doesn't exist, man is the chief of the god of the earth, of the universe, magnificence. Only he is going to God with God. That's the question. I always come back to that question. For whom is man going to love then? To whom will he be thankful? To whom will he sing the hymn? Rakitin laughs. Rakitin says that one can love humanity without God. Only a snivelling idiot can maintain that. I can't understand it. Life's easy for Rakitin. You'd better think about the extension of civic rights, or even to keeping down the price of meat. You will show your love for humanity more simply and directly by that than by philosophy. I answered him, well, by... That's the sound of me whacking my head against the microphone. Well, but you, without a god. Goodness is one thing with me and another and a Chinaman. Or isn't it? Is it relative? A treacherous question. You won't laugh if I tell you to keep me awake two nights. I wonder now how people can live and think nothing about it. Vanity. Ivan has no god. He has an idea. It's beyond me. But he is silent. I believe he is a Freemason. I asked him, but he is silent. I wanted to drink from the springs of his souls. He was silent, but once he did drop a word. What did he say? Alyosha took it up quickly. I said to him, then everything is lawful if it is so. He frowned. Everything is lawful if it is so? Fyodor Pavlovich, our papa, he said, was a pig. But his ideas were right enough. That was what he dropped. That was all he said. He was going one better than Rakitin. Yes, Alyosha assented bitterly. What? When was he with you? Of that later. Now I must speak of something else. Have you talked to the council? What's the use of the council? I told him all about it. He's a soft city bred rogue, a Bernard. But he doesn't believe me, not a bit of it. Only imagine he believes I did it. I see it. In that case, I asked him, why have you come to defend me? Hang them all. They've got a doctor down too. Do want to prove I'm mad? I won't have that. Katerina wants to do her duty to the end, whatever the strain. Mitya smiled bitterly. The cat, hard-hearted creature, she knows that I said of her at Mokroi that she was a woman of great wrath. They repeated it. Yes, the facts against me have grown numerous. Many people are honest because they are fools. Oh, I am afraid she will tell how she bowed to the ground after that 4,000. She'll pay it back to the last farthing. I don't want her sacrifice. Go to her, Alyosha. Ask her not to speak of that in court. Can you? But damn it all, it doesn't matter. I shall get through somehow. I don't pity her. It's her own doing. She deserves what she gets. I shall have my own story to tell Alexei. He smiled bitterly again. Only Grushenka, Rusha, Grusha, good lord, what should she have had suffering to bear? He exclaimed suddenly with ears. Grusha is killing me. The thought of her killing me, killing me. She was with me just now. She told me she was very much grieved by you today. I know she confounded my temper. It was jealousy. I was sorry. I kissed her as she was going. I didn't ask her forgiveness. Why didn't you ask, Alyosha? Suddenly Mitya laughed. God preserve you, my dear boy, from ever asking forgiveness for a fault from a woman you love, from one you love especially, however greatly you may have been in fault. For a woman, devil only knows what to make of a woman. I know something about them anyway, but try to acknowledge your own fault. I'm sorry, forgive me, and shower reproaches will follow. Nothing will make her forgive you. Simply and directly she'll humble you in the dusk. Bring forward things. It shall scrape up all the scrapings and load them on your head. They are ready to flay you alive, I tell you, every one of them. All these angels without whom we cannot live, I tell you plainly and openly, dear boy, every decent man ought to be under some woman's thumb. That's my conviction. Oh, man ought to be magnanimous, and it's no disgrace to a man, no disgrace to a hero, not even a Caesar. But don't ever beg her pardon, all the same, for anything. Remember the rule given to you by Brother Mitchell, who's come to ruin through women. Alright, better make up to Grisha somehow without begging pardon. I worship her, Alexei, worship her, only she doesn't see it. She still thinks I don't love her enough. She tortures me with her love. The past was nothing. In the past, it was only those infernal curves of hers that tortured me. But now I have taken all her soul into my soul, and through her I've become a man. Will they marry us? What did she say to you about me? Alyosha repeated all Grushenka had said to him. Mitya listened. Then she is not angry at my being jealous, he exclaimed. She is a regular woman. I have a fierce heart for myself. Ah, I love my fierce things. We shall fight, but I shall love her. Do they let convicts marry? That's the question, and without her I can't exist. Mitchell walked frowning across the room. So there's a secret, she says, a secret. We've got up a plot against her, and Kratcher is mixed up in it. She thinks, no, my good grandson. He looked around, went close up quickly to Alyosha, who was standing before him, and whispered to him in an air of mystery, though in reality no one could hear him. I will tell you all our secret, Mitya whispered hurriedly. I meant to tell you later, for how could I decide? Though I say that Ivan is superior to blah blah blah, it's a decision we will decide. Perhaps it's you that is superior, not Ivan. You see, it's a question of conscience, question of higher conscience. The secret is so important that I can't settle it myself. And I've put it off till I can speak to you, but anyway, something, you listen but don't decide. Stand and keep quiet. I won't tell you everything. I only tell you the idea without details. Not a question, not a movement. You agree, but my goodness, what shall I do with your eyes? I am afraid your eyes will tell me your decision, even if you don't speak. Oh, I'm afraid, Alyosha. Listen, Ivan suggests my escaping. I won't tell you the details. It has been thought out. It can be all arranged. Hush, don't decide. I should go to America with Grusha. You know I can't live with Grusha. What if they won't let her follow me to Siberia? Do they let convicts get married? Ivan thinks not. And without Grusha, what should I do there underground with a hammer? I should only smash my skull. But, on the other hand, my conscience, I should have run away from suffering. A sign has come. Alexei, because you are the only person who can understand this, there is no one else. It's folly, madness to the others. I am not out of my mind, and I am not a fool. Ivan understands about the hymn, too. He understands, only he doesn't answer. He doesn't speak. Don't decide. Spare me. I can't live with Grusha. Wait till after the trial. Mitya ended beside himself. He held Alyosha with both hands on his shoulders, and his yearning, feverish eyes were fixed on his brother's. They don't let convicts marry, do they? He repeated for a third time in a supplicating voice. Alyosha listened with extreme surprise and was deeply moved. Tell me one thing, he said. Is Ivan very keen on it, and whose idea was it? It was his idea, and he's keen on it. He didn't come to see me at first, and he is awfully keen on it. He doesn't ask me, but orders me to escape. He doesn't doubt me obeying him. I showed him all my heart I have to you, but of that later. He simply said on it, it's all a matter of money. He'll pay 10,000 for escape and give me 20,000 for America. And he told you on no account to tell me, Alyosha said, to tell no one, especially not you, on no account to tell you. He is afraid, no doubt, that you'll stand before me as my conscience. Don't tell him I told you. You are right, Alyosha pronounced. It's impossible to decide anything before the trial is over. After the trial, you'll decide of yourself. Then you'll find that new man in yourself, and he will decide. A new man or a Bernard, he'll decide, or a Bernard. For I believe I am contemptible Bernard myself, said Mitya with a bitter grin. But, brother, have you no hope, then, of being acquitted? Mitya shrugged his shoulders nervously. Alyosha, darling, it's time you were going, he said with his sudden haste. There is a superintendent shouting in the yard. He'll be here directly. We are late. It's irregular. Embrace me quickly. Kiss me. Sign me with the cross, darling, for the cross I have to bear tomorrow. They embraced and kissed. Ivan, said Mitya suddenly, suggests my escape, but of course he believes I did it. A mournful smile came to his lips. Have you ever asked whether he believes it? Asked Alyosha. No, I haven't. I wanted to, but I couldn't. I hadn't the courage, but I saw it from his eyes. Well, goodbye. Once more they kissed hurriedly, and Alyosha was just going out when Mitya suddenly called him back. Stand facing me, that's right, and again he sees Alyosha putting both hands on his shoulders. His face became suddenly quite pale, so that it was dreadfully apparent, even through the gathering darkness. His lips twitched, his eyes fastened on Alyosha. Alyosha, tell me the whole truth, as you were before God. Do you believe I did it? Do you think you believe a whole thing truth? Don't cry desperately. Everything seemed heaving before Alyosha, and he felt something like a stab at his heart. Hush, what do you mean? He faltered. The whole truth, don't lie. I never for one instant believed that you were the murderer, broke in a shaking voice from Erica's breast, and he raised his right hand in the air as though calling God to witness his words. Mitch's whole face was lighted with bliss. Thank you, he articulated slowly, as though letting a sigh escape him after fainting. Now you have given me new life. Would you believe it? Till this moment I've been meaning to ask you, even you well go. You've given me strength for tomorrow. God bless you. Come along. Love, Ivan, was Mitch's last word. Alyosha went out in tears. Such distrustfulness and mischief, such lack of... Well, she suddenly opened up before him. Intense, indefinite... There was a poignant ache in his torn heart. Love, Ivan. He suddenly recalled Mitch's words, and he was going to Ivan. He badly wanted to see Ivan all day. He was much worried about Ivan, as about Mitch, and more than ever now. Alright, have your say about that dog shit of a piece of a chapter over at reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. If you made it through that, you're a stronger person than I. That was torture. Like, the only reason I think you would write it something like that is to torture people. That's the boringest, most mundane, tedious writing on the face of the planet. Yeah, have your say. If you can tell me what the frick just happened, that would be handy, because, like, none of that meant anything to me. None of it. Anyway, thanks. See you tomorrow.